What if you could learn more about your health in under an hour? The Pronuvo Whole Body Scan gives you a comprehensive look at your health, screening for over 500 conditions, including many solid tumors as early as stage one. High-quality imaging, no radiation, no contrast. Book your scan today at Pronuvo.com. That's Prenuvo.com. Gain clarity, confidence, and peace of mind with Pronuvo. Invest in your health today. Visit Prenuvo.com. That's Prenuvo.com.
If you're a podcast host, listen up, this one's for you. My name is Allie Jackson. I'm the host of Finding Mr. Height, a dating and relationship podcast that I've been doing for 4 years now, sharing my positive and practical approach to dating that's built on my own life experience. And I wanted to share another experience that I've had, my secret behind monetizing my show. It's called Red Circle. And I was just telling my colleague about how much I love their platform. With Red Circle, not only am I getting a seamless hosting experience, but I also love the support I receive in ad sales. It's not just typical ad sales either. It's targeted opportunities based on my show and my life. And the platform is super simple. You just set your preferences and Red Circle matches you with sponsors that align with your show. You can vet every opportunity and their platform gives you great analytics. More recently too, my Red Circle team has brought me opportunities outside of my podcast on social media to really augment the podcast partnerships, bring them full circle. I just can't recommend them enough. If you want to give it a try, go to redcircle.com to get your free trial. That's redcircle.com for a free trial.
You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable. This episode of the Sportsman's Empire is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. Since 1952, Interstate Batteries has been evoking compassion and a trustworthy spirit into the surrounding communities. Interstate Batteries is a mission-driven company fueled by purpose and guided by their values. If you need help locating a specific battery, stop into your local Interstate Batteries retail store and speak with a battery specialist. They even offer cell phone repairs. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable. All right, everybody, this is the Hunting Gear Podcast. I'm your host, Dan Johnson. And, dude, Pierce Nellis here over here has been a regular customer as of late. You've been almost every podcast I do.
Yeah.
I don't know. Like, thanks for taking time out of your day to do it, dude.
Hey, absolutely, man. That's what happens when we run out of a guest, right?
Oh, dude, or you have a guest scheduled and they're like 5 minutes before the recording time. They're like, oh, dude, well, I got a kid thing or I got a work thing I forgot about. Or my favorite is, oh, is that today? And you're like, you accepted the email invite, dude. Like,
yep.
You know, so
yeah,
I guess
I would imagine. Yeah, this time of year, I feel like it's probably more, I mean, I don't know. It's a busy time of year, but also, like, I always assume, like, you probably had something good show up on cell cam or something, like, right. You're getting the fuck out of here.
It's right. Or you just don't feel like talking on a podcast, so.
Exactly.
Hey, listen. I want to talk a little bit about cough drops for a second, because I've been
essential piece of gear.
Dude, I've had this cough now for like 3 weeks and it just is not going away. I don't know. Like, I don't know what's going on, but I'm like, I wake up halfway through the night with no moisture in my throat. It feels like I'm swallowing sand, but Halls are great, right? Halls cough drops, but dude, there are these VapoCool from Vicks Vapor Rub. I don't know. Have you ever seen these? These are the only way to go when it comes to cough drops. Literally, they give you that cooling sensation. Maybe it's a little bit of a numbing sensation. I go for the winter frost type, max strength, fast relief. And I don't know why I'm talking about cough drops on a hunting gear podcast, but if you're coughing a lot and you need to get out into the, now I don't think this is like going to solve your smoker's cough. But if you're like sore throat cough, then maybe the Vicks VapoCool severe menthol. It's the menthol. It's got to be the menthol, right?
Right.
Right. So
absolutely, anyway, dude,
take a couple cough drops with you to the tree stand. Dude, how was your year this year?
It was good, man. Yeah. Punched my first Iowa tag with the bow back at the start of November, and been trying to punch a tag in Wisconsin a little bit. Not as hard as I normally do. just kind of putting my eggs in the Iowa basket this season, but we just had Wisconsin's gun opener. Saw like 20 deer, 15 of them were does. And so I've definitely got some herd management to do over there. But yeah. I had one buck that came in kind of, he was like probably number 4 or 5 on the list of just deer that we've had on the cell cam and stuff this year, just kind of keeping tabs on everything. And I thought long and hard about it as he stood there at 25 yards for like 15 minutes and the safety was off and then it was on again. And I just couldn't bring myself to let one fly on him. So
I got
still have that tag rocker rattling around in my pocket right now.
That's all right. Nothing wrong with a tag. It gives you options. Mm-hmm. Like if you're tagged out, there's no options. But right. if you got a exactly. tag in your pocket, there's still hope for the
yep.
season. And
exactly.
I'm trying to think about what I want to do this year. If I want to go and do like a one of the shotgun seasons that are coming up, or if I want to do a shotgun season, or if I want to do, because I got a muzzleloader sitting on this couch over here in my office that I've bought, but I've never used during an actual gun season
mm-hmm.
so far. And so I think I'm going to go shoot that maybe next week. At some point, and I'm going to try to sight it in, see what I can do. If it doesn't work, then I think I might go out during one of the shotgun seasons. I still got some decent deer running around on the farms that I have access to. And I think that might be more of a fill the freezer. Like, I think yeah. I got my son's doe from youth season. I got my buck currently at the processor. And then after that, I have my, I got one tag left. I feel like one more doe in the freezer would be a good thing. Even if I just mm-hmm. grind all of it up.
Yep.
I got that. And so, I don't know, man, I'm looking forward to the rest of the season. I got those options, right? You got options,
right? Exactly. Yeah, yep. Dude, have you found the muzzleloader seasons tend to be a little more chill around where you're at?
Well, yeah. I mean, especially mm-hmm. if you're trying to bounce around on public and just shoot right. anything. Like, I would say locating a good buck after the let's say you don't manage your farm, you have no standing crops, you have like no food, then I would say locating a really good caliber deer can be difficult. But right. if you're that guy who has a managed property to hunt and there's food on it specifically for late season, well, you're going to have deer on it mm-hmm. at somewhere. I have a couple properties that I hunt that I'm trying to figure out whether or not I want to, like, do I want to play this second cycle estrus potentially, if there's any does that are running around. I have a couple good deer on camera. Most of them are nocturnal already again. I mean, we're recording this on November 25th. And we're coming off of the rut here in Iowa. There's no gun season until the 6th, December 6th. So I have a more of a bow season coming up, but every single day, it just seems like deer are getting more into that bed to food pattern.
Yep.
And I think I might just wait until that shotgun season and maybe either go after one particular buck that I feel. Cause I don't know, man, like shooting a deer at 100 yards with a gun and shooting a deer at 19 yards with a bow.
It's a different game.
I feel like, you know how I lean, man.
Yep. Yep. Totally. I do agree, though. Like, I don't know, there's something about, now I've heard that that first shotgun season in Iowa is just an absolute, like, just gong show. And Wisconsin opening or doing their gun season that last week of November, typically, and yeah. then having muzzleloader transition straight into that.
Yeah.
I hunted Buzz last year for the first time, and I found that first week of December to be, like, just awesome, like super, super. Granted, it was like just absolutely frigid last year with like 30 yeah. mile an hour bombing winds. But the deer, as soon as like all the rifles got out of there, the deer were immediately just back onto that food to bed pattern, and it was pretty enjoyable. But
what has your experience been in with sighting in a muzzleloader?
do it in as few shots as possible, man. I don't know, more so just because it's like you got to clean it so much. And like, I was shooting a buddy of mine, so his was, he'd already sighted it in, luckily, and we were just checking it, so I didn't go through the entire process of doing that. So not the best person to ask on that, but I think he did it in maybe five shots. Like, I think they're, I don't really know, because I know some people talk about how there can be some inconsistencies with muzzleloaders, but depending on which modern muzzleloader you've got now, like, you can dial it in pretty well. I know some guys, you know, it's kind of like archery guys with their muzzleloaders, I think, really nerd out on some of that stuff and, you know, get down to the minutia. But
yeah, I got a CV. Yeah, I got a CVA over there. And so here's what I'm going to say. And I have no, I honestly don't think I should even say this, because that, this is how much firearm experience I don't have. And that is, like, I just don't, I don't have the experience doing it. But one thing that I've noticed, even at 50 yards, so my goal with this muzzleloader is like 100 yards max. Like, that's where I would like to get a deer in, into. First three shots are great. However, once you start to get to shot four and shot five and shot six out of the same barrel, I feel like the cleanliness plays a huge role. And then I'm starting to see shot inconsistencies, which makes it difficult to sight it in, which means that I just need to clean after every third shot. I need to clean it.
Yep.
Clean the barrel. So maybe I'm way off, or maybe I just suck at sighting in a firearm, a muzzleloader, but it is what it is, right?
So, yeah, it's a laborious process when you got to sit there and you got to strip everything down and clean it all out. And yeah, it's,
meanwhile, it's a mess. Meanwhile, I sighted in my my straight wall cartridge 350, this 350 Legend that I bought for the kids for youth season. I sighted that in like four shots. And at 100 yards. So I'm like, that's great, right? Like, that's great. But the muzzleloader takes a little bit more work. So hence why rifles are so popular. You can shoot them more. You got to clean them less, and just a different type of upkeep necessary for them. But no rifles in Iowa. That's no, like, no rifle season in Iowa. Shotgun season, I guess you can use your straight wall cartridges. That's fine. But I don't know.
I don't know. Like, a lot of guys, such a lot of guys, game, man.
Yeah. It's just, like, a different game.
Yeah. Spending so many years shooting 270s and 243s and 6.5s and all that. Like, you go from that to a 350 Legend or a 450 Bushmaster. Like, it just is a more well-built shotgun, I feel like, at the end of the day. But
yeah, I got you. I got you. All right. I'm going to hit pause for one second so I can have a loud, crazy cough. So just one second. Rip. Did you hear any of that?
Nope, nothing.
Okay, good. It was nasty. You could hear the loogie just like boiling in the back of my throat. All right. So before we get into some topics today of this BS session, I want to send a huge shout out to Reveal Trail Cameras. The brand new Ultra is out. And before that was the 3.0 versions, the X and the Pro. Man, really good cameras. The functionality of these cameras is, I just want to, like, here's what I require out of a cell cam. I put batteries in it. I want it to connect to the app or to my phone in a certain way. And that when I put it out and I walk away from it and I follow the instructions, I want it to send pictures to me, whether I have to check the app or get the notifications, whatever. And that is exactly what Reveal Trail Cameras do. And so I'm not the kind of guy who wants, like, all this high tech, crazy technology, this and that. That's not what I require, but they offer that. Right. So it's just a cherry on top with all the other extra stuff that they have associated with their app, the GPS capabilities, which I think is badass. The cool thing is I forgot where I put one of my cell cams. After I walked into a run and gun set this year, I looked at my phone. I goes like, man, it says I have a camera over here. So I got down on my way out of the timber, like noon. I got down, I walked, I looked, and sure enough, that camera is, batteries are dead, but the GPS is still working on that camera. And so I was able to go take it down and be like, okay, now I know exactly where, you know, exactly where my cameras are at all time. That's badass theft deterrent. And I will say this, that I am making a special trip to one of my farms next week to take down trail cameras just so the shotgun hunters that come through second season don't mess with them again, which it sucks that I have to do that, but it's just that 5 hours I'll have to spend, or, you know, driving there, driving back, walking into the woods, taking them down is better than, I guess, any of the drama. So they win, right? Yeah. Congratulations. Yeah. They won. However, tacticam.com/cameras. Check out the new Ultra and all the previous versions of their camera. Badass camera. The functionality is great. The pictures are great. The cellular service is great. And I know for a fact there's some really big things to come with the Tacticam and the Reveal cameras. So go check them out. All right, Pierce. You use Tacticam, don't, or Reveal cameras, don't you?
I got one of them, yeah.
Yeah. Work, yeah. Okay for you?
Yeah. Yeah, dude. I mean, that thing's been, it's, I think it's like an old 2.0 or something like that, but it's still chugging. Dude, on that GPS note, I don't know if you saw, there was a guy in Wisconsin who had a handful of his cameras stolen, and the people who stole them were dumb enough to turn the camera on and look right at it and get a photo of their own face. But using that GPS function on the Reveal, he knew, basically followed the thing straight to their house, banged on their door, and got all of his stuff back. And they had, like, I mean, 30, 40 cameras, not all his, but just like from different people. They were just in there cleaning out the woods. It was crazy. But
I would be that guy who, I won't even knock at their door. I'd just send the sheriff over there and be like, hey, I have proof this guy stole my shit. I want it back, and I want it now. And if I ever have any other trail camera stolen off my property, I'm coming to you first, and I'm pressing 100% charges on you first.
Yep.
So, and I'll file a lawsuit, whatever it takes, just to, just like, I'm sick of the shit, right? Mm-hmm. I don't want to ruin my good mood today, because if we start talking about it, I'll derail and I'll go down a path that nobody wants me on. So
deal.
Okay. I want to talk about arrows today, bow setups and arrows. My buck this year, my two deer last year, my buck in 2023, my buck in 2022, my buck in 2021. No, that wasn't a pass through because that was a frontal. 2020, 19. 18, 17, 16, all pass-throughs, okay? I hit bone, you know, some of those, and those shots range from 12 yards for my Kansas buck, which at 525 grains, I should be getting a pass-through at 70-pound draw, and 70-pound draw, 30-inch draw length, right? Obviously. But, dude, I feel like even at shorter distances, the guys, some of these people, and I want to get your thoughts on this. I would assume that you would want your arrow to pass all the way through this animal to get it. And I'm seeing guys hit rib cages, or maybe it's the mechanicals they're shooting, but I'm seeing deer, like, arrow penetration halt about halfway through the deer, and seeing a lot of arrows running away with the deer on a lot of social media, a lot of TV stuff that I'm, like, YouTube stuff that I'm watching. And that just doesn't make sense to me. I feel like if you're not getting, if you're at 20 yards and your arrow isn't passing all the way through a deer at a rib, like, and it's because it's hitting ribs, you're like, something's wrong with your arrow setup or your bow setup. I don't know. Yep. That's just my gut reaction. What are your thoughts on that?
No, I totally agree, dude, because I shoot a very, very, like, I don't know, we talk about the range fairy, like the big boy arrow. I shoot like toddler arrows. They're like 480 grains, like 100 XT shafts with 125 grain G5 Montech on it. Like nothing fancy whatsoever.
You said a total arrow weight of 480.
Yeah, 480. Yeah.
But that's still fairly heavy.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm not. None of it's like micro diameter or anything like that. I know some guys nerd out on the whole like the flight path trajectory or whatever. Like as long as I'm hitting where I'm aiming, I don't care. And as long as it's not pinwheeling like crazy, I can say like I do think that it has to be mechanicals that are getting caught up on this stuff. I think it's two things: either mechanicals or it's weak blades on the. If it's like a replaceable blade or something like that with a razor, something like that where like it can catch bone and they're tougher to get ripping sharp like you can with like a solid fixed blade head, where something you've got the backbone and the strength behind it that you can actually just bust through that rib rather than like catch on it and kind of, you know, chug your way through it almost. Because we've all pulled those heads out of there and seen how chewed up those blades get. But I think it's something like that. And honestly, I think shot trajectory plays a big part. And I know a lot of guys try and crowd the shoulder and try and get right into that vital V or whatever. When I don't know, I've always been a like just center mass the lungs if you can. And
oh, yeah.
Like a deer's dying no matter what if you hit them there, especially if you hit liver. I mean, that was what I did this year. I caught like the back end of liver and the back end of the lungs, front end of the liver. He made it 100 yards.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's the same with me. I'm shooting 4 inches off shoulder, 4 to 6 inches off shoulder this year, a double lung, watched him fall over. I didn't watch him, but I heard him fall over in 60, 70 yards from where I shot him, dead as a doornail. And it's just, what do you think the thought process of the average hunter is when building their bow? Like, are people still really concerned about speed enough to sacrifice arrow weight?
I don't know, dude. I feel like we went like a couple of years ago, the whole industry seemed like it went through this obsession with high FOC arrow builds and everything. And like, if you're not shooting like 500 plus or 600 grain arrows, like you may as well not even, you know, take a shot at them. I don't know. Cause I know the micro diameter shafts have gotten better. Obviously bow technology is skyrocketing and just continues to get better. I don't know, dude. Part of it's like I don't have the headspace to dive into the minutia of arrow building and all these different stuffs. I take my bow in every summer to get tuned up, and as long as my arrows are flying straight, I'm happy with it. Because for a while there, I'm also coming off of like a big target panic era, and so I bought the cheapest arrows possible so that if and when I did lose them, I wouldn't be heartbroken that I just lost like a $45 arrow that I built, and instead it was like a $9 build. And so, you know, I think there's some obsession there, but not to state the obvious, but you know, if your arrows aren't flying well, and if they're not hitting where you're aiming, and if you're not making a good shot and working on your actual like shot mechanics, like doesn't matter what weight arrow you're shooting or what your bow setup is like, you're going to have issues.
Yeah. Okay. With that said, you shoot a fixed blade, the G5 Montauk, Montauk.
Yep.
That's a fixed blade. Do you shoot a fixed blade because you are worried about penetration with energy loss on a mechanical? Why a fixed for you? Why the age old question, fixed blade versus mechanical? Why for you?
Similar to like how you started this conversation, I used to shoot like the old two blade Rage, and like, you'd have, you know, the 2-inch slice or whatever inside of the deer. But like you said, they'd stop halfway through that deer. Yeah, I killed them all. But if I had made a bad shot, which I did on one of the biggest bucks I've ever taken a crack at, I ended up like hitting them kind of like spine, backstrap or whatever. I got like 2 or 3 inches of penetration because one half of that blade didn't deploy. And so, you know, I watched the thing just barely stick in there. He ran off into my light or, you know, into my right. into my nightmares, I guess. And so then I was like, OK, I'm going to switch to fixed blade and try that out. And so I shot like, I think it was it's like the Muzzy Trocar or something like that. Like, yeah. You know, standard find it anywhere kind of broadhead. And that's kind of another bit of my thought process. Like the G5 Vontech is like, I can get those at Walmart. I can get those at Cabela's or anywhere. If I ever like lose them or something right. happens, they're readily available. Mm-hmm. But, you know, shooting those ones, that Trocar, I think, you know, I shot one like a little bit high and I didn't love the penetration that I got, partially because, like I mentioned earlier, that blade got chewed up pretty bad just going through ribs and yeah. didn't really love that. But, I mean, I've had zero issues with those Montex just because they're – I mean, if I miss something or I shoot a squirrel or whatever and the thing ends up in the dirt, like I just take it home. It's easy to sharpen and they're just rock solid heads. I've never broken one. I've never chipped one. I've never had any issues with them. And they just hit hard and keep going as soon as they touch yeah. stuff.
Yeah. I'm trying to I've been shooting the same broadhead, not consistently, but for since 2006. Mm-hmm. And then I took a year and I tried an NAP Spitfire and I got a pass through on that deer. And maybe it was the way it had one leg forward, one leg back when I stopped it, pass through deer. And then maybe it was because of the hide that then came over the wounds as the deer was running away. Literally no blood trail on that buck. We had to grid search the whole next day to find it. And when I went in to open it up, there all the blood was inside of it still. It didn't bleed hardly at all. Even when it fell down and when we found it and it fell down, it was right there, all no blood around it. And that was a double lung shot. It didn't come out his nose.
What on earth?
Yeah, right. Like crazy. No blood trail. And then that would have been in 2009 when I shot that buck with that head. And I'm trying to think of another incident where I shot a smaller, broadhead, like it starts with an S. Golly, broadheads. I gotta do a little research here real quick. Fixed blade.
Slick trick.
Yes, that's the one. Here's what I got out of the slick trick. The slick trick, it was a fixed blade head, four blades. I believe it was the one that I was shooting. No, it was a 3-blade one, the one I was shooting. And it tuned very well. Mm-hmm. Tuned very well. Again, I shot 2 does with that head that year. And the blood trails sucked on it. Like, just not a, I don't know if it was a big enough opening or whatever the case was. And so then after that is when I kind of went, I went back to Wasp and the jackhammer. And then one out of those years, I had a 4-blade, the Boss 4-blade. When I went elk hunting, I came back and I didn't change my arrows. I just kept the same head that I was going to use because I wanted a fixed blade for elk. So there was no energy loss, bigger animal. And I was smoking deer that year with that. Great blood trails and stuff. And so, but that was before I took the big jump to the heavier arrow. And so when I took the step up with the heavier arrow, I was less concerned about energy loss on the deployment of a mechanical. So that's when I started going back to the Wasp 3-blade jackhammer. And dude, that thing just crushes. Like I've had, that's the head that I'm the most confident in. Mm-hmm. Is that head right there. And maybe it's a little bit of confidence. Maybe it's because on marginal shots, I still have gotten pass-throughs. Maybe it's because of the blood trail aspect. Like this year, it was paint cans. And I know the shot was at 19 yards, so I'm kind of talking about something completely different. Like at a 19-yard shot, you should be getting pass-throughs. I got a pass-through with a total arrow weight of 525 grains. But even at my furthest kill, which was in 2019, with that head 35-yard shot, again, complete pass-through, watched him fall over, dead. That was a liver and lung hit, and that hit that went inner rib, outer rib, bone on bone both times, and complete pass-through. And so I don't know. I've been seeing a lot of these one, especially in a soft tissue, even on behind the ribs on a broadside shot. Dude, if you're not hitting any bone at all, your arrow should be going through that entire animal.
Right.
Like right. At 20 yards, your arrow setup should be doing that. So it tells something's wrong with your arrow setup. This is me personally. If you're not able to send it through the guts of a whitetail at 20 yards.
Yeah.
That's just my opinion on that. And I would love to hear other people like, and granted there's issues that when you get close to the shoulder, right? When you might hit opposite, like if you're at the right angle, you hit shoulder blade, that might slow it down. Or you hit the actual ball joint of the front shoulder, something like that, or a big joint, a bone on bone area. But dude, even then, before I made the shift to the five, I think I went from like 400 to 450 to 525, somewhere in that 400 to 450 era, I was still going through shoulders. And granted, I'm shooting 30 inches at 70 pounds, which helps me. But I don't know, even if your draw length is, you're shooting a 70-pound draw or 60 pounds at 27-inch draw or something like that, I still feel your arrow setup should be going through that. And maybe I'm wrong.
Two Good & Co. coffee creamers are made with farm-fresh cream, real milk, and contain 3 grams of sugar per serving. That's 40% less than the 5 grams per serving in leading traditional coffee creamers for a rich, delicious experience. Whether you enjoy your coffee hot, cold, bold, or frothy, Two Good coffee creamers make every sip a good one. Two Good coffee creamers, real goodness in every sip. Find them at your local Kroger in the creamer aisle.
Where's your playlist taking you? Down the highway? To the mountains? Or just into daydream mode while you're stuck in traffic? With over 4,000 hotels worldwide, Best Western is there to help you make the most of your getaway. Wherever that is. Because the only thing better than a great playlist is a great trip. Life's the trip. Make the most of it at Best Western. Book direct and save at bestwestern.com.
Maybe I'm
no, wrong. I think as efficient as modern bows are, and I get that not everyone has the most modern bow. I'm not saying that everybody needs to have a brand new Matthews or Hoyt or, you know, whatever it may be. But even so, like I was getting pass-throughs with my like 14-year-old Mission Riot with those fixed heads, but I'd have issues with mechanicals. And so I haven't tried mechanicals with my new bow that's shooting significantly faster and it's just a lot more efficient. But I absolutely agree with you. Like I think people get obsessed with the marketing, the packaging of the broadheads, and like, oh, it's got a 2¾-inch cutting diameter, like whatever. Like you see these pictures of the holes that it leaves and stuff, and like, yeah, that's great. But like you said, like if things go wrong, or you like, even if you gut punch one and your arrow is not going through that, like there's something seriously wrong going on there. So I think paying attention to like what the like how deep or shallow the angle of those blades is. Like if you get some of these rages that, you know, especially that old two blade that I used to shoot. I mean, yeah, it's a super wide cutting diameter, but like in order to get that wide, like the blades are not even hardly at a 45-degree angle. Like you're almost shooting it with like a, it's like throwing a cleaver at it at that point. Like it just hits like I don't know.
And that's great.
Work. Yeah.
Right. That's great if you want a gigantic entry wound. Because are you talking about the rages that were the slip cams where they come out the back? Yeah.
Yep.
Like that. So my Wasp is the blades are facing forward, and when they hit, they fold backwards.
Yep.
So my entry wound isn't as big, but upon the deployment, when it opens up internally, it is turning those organs into soup, basically. And then when you come out the backside, I mean, you got a big hole from the exit wound, but I get it. I just feel like, I don't know, man. I don't know.
I think if you are shooting mechanical, that's the type that you need, is something that, you know, it's like a front deploying blade and not something that has, it takes force. I mean, you try and like deploy some of those old, like weird slip hinge things or whatever on the Rage. Like you go to push that thing, like it takes a significant amount of pressure. Whereas like,
so I was talking to
slice your finger.
Yeah. I was talking to a guy who is an engineer, and he is a broadhead designer. I'm going to keep who he is out of here and what brand he works for out of here. And he told me that talk to me a little bit about the broadhead market and all this stuff. And he goes, if I had one wish, I would take away every 100 grain broadhead on the market, because if they offer it in a 125, it's just that much more robust. You're having thicker blades on your heads, which means that the blade failure, or, you know, you were talking about blades being chewed up as they were hitting bone and stuff coming out the other side and bending. And there's a lot of force generated when an arrow hits a deer and it starts to squirm and kick and run. You know, I've had broken arrows in the past and bent blades on broadheads because of all that generated. But the more weight and I'll use the word robust your broadhead is, I don't want to talk shit on certain brands, but I have seen some of these two blade gigantic, like the three inch diameter and the 2 3/4 inch diameter blades bend like tinfoil.
Yep.
Right. Even shooting at a foam target and then pull them out and you can't even fold them back up again because they're already bent. And so I look at something like that and I go, that's a piece of shit. Because if a buck of a lifetime comes through and I'm not able to trust that to do what I need it to do, and that's destroy all living tissue on that animal, then I don't know, man. I don't know.
Yeah.
So when I hear people talk about how impressed they are with certain, I don't judge my broadheads on perfectly, you know, perfect broadside shots. I judge my broadheads based off of when I put a shitty shot on an animal, what it does at that point. And so that's why I've chosen the full disclosure, I have a partnership with those with Wasp, but you know, I mean, dude, I tell you what, if Wasp broadheads were costing me deer, I would not be shooting Wasp broadheads.
Right.
Right. And so anyway, take that how you want to take it. I just feel like something's wrong with an arrow setup if it doesn't have a pass through at 20 yards.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I just feel like guys should be passing through. And you talked a little bit about bows there for a second. On paper, like obviously there's technology updates every single year with bows, but on paper, a 30-inch draw with 70-pound draw weight and X amount of arrows should perform a certain way as the next bow. Right. And so something two, three years in a row of a new version of the same bow comes out. I'm sure there's maybe a little bit, but for the most part, it's going to be firing an arrow the same exact way as the flagship bow or whatever version of that bow the previous year.
Right.
So I guess what I would say is I would challenge bow hunters to really think about their arrow setup. And if you're not getting pass-throughs, broadside shots at 20 yards, and you see your arrow just like hit mud in there, then I would really strongly consider reevaluating your arrow setup. I don't know. That's just me.
Yeah. No, I like what you said there about that guy who said, like, if he could change anything, he'd take all the 100 grain arrows or broadheads off the market. I don't know where we got locked into the 100 grain setup, but like you look at some of the more robust broadhead brands out there. I mean, they don't even sell 100 grain tip. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like
right.
A lot of them, it's a minimum 125. Some of them, it's even 150 and going all the way up to 200. Like I think, granted, I don't think it would make the industry as much money, but if they were to, standardize the 125 or the 150, I think folks would have a lot better success with the same shafts that they're shooting with the same, not having to change anything but that and then resight their bows. I think that would make a massive difference for reasons, like you said there, on just how much more well-built that head's going to be. Because even when you look at like a fixed blade, 100 grain versus a 125, yeah, we're talking 25 grains, but like you notice like an actual difference between the two of them just in the thickness of the metal and how solid it is.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And the tip plays a huge role in the even where these heads are manufactured, like, I feel like it plays a huge role. Like not as much as it used to, where, made in China meant something different 20 years ago than what it does today.
Right.
I feel right. I still think, some good stuff can come out of China, but I don't know if I'm taking that chance. I don't know. Like a lot of that has to do with, my confidence, and, I'm sure I'm going to say, like, based off the law of averages and throw the word statistics in there. I'm sure you get a 20 yard broadside shot, you're going to be killing that deer if you hit it in the lungs anyway. Right.
Right.
But I want to prepare for the worst case scenario. So I want to shoot an arrow that is going to crush, not just hit the deer and kill it. I want my arrow setup to destroy what it hits in the most gruesome way possible. And that may sound bad, but what am I trying to do? I'm not trying to injure the animal. I'm trying to kill it in a way that's as fast as possible. And two holes are better than one. So mm-hmm.
Definitely. Well, I think there's something to be said too. I mean, if we want to dive into the engineering of broadheads and stuff, like the fewer components you have in a head, the 100%. Less likely it is to fail, right? Mm-hmm. It's like if you have a one piece, machined head, I mean, that's more than likely going to be more solid than anything else that's got, multiple pieces or replaceable, whatever. And like, yeah, that all might sound great, but I don't know. I'd take being able to resharpen over replace the entire head any day.
Yeah. Let me ask you this. Are the Montauks vented heads, or are they a solid piece?
They are vented, and they whistle like a son of a gun. And so that's my one thing. I'm going to switch because they do also have a solid I think it's just like their solid Montauk or whatever. But yeah, I'll be switching to those next year. But I've heard that those don't tune quite as well. So I don't know.
This is where it gets weird. Okay. I had a company send me some broadheads a couple summers ago. And it wasn't that I was not going to use my Wasp heads. They trusted me enough. Like, hey, we want your opinion on these heads. Dude, I'm telling you, I put the heads on and I got to like 30 yards and I was sending them downrange. And I was like, what is that noise? What is that noise? And so then I had a friend come over and he shot an arrow and I didn't stand in front of the target, right? But I stood off to the side. And those vented broadheads,
yep,
they made so much noise. And I was like, nope, like not, it's not even a question. I wouldn't use it. Now, this brand also sent me this brand also sent me a solid version. It's not the same version, but a solid broadhead. And it didn't make that noise. It made less noise. But something about vented fixed blade broadheads or anything like even some of the Slick Tricks or what's another brand that has, for example, like some of those blades are vented. Dude, they're loud.
Yeah.
They're loud. Especially the bigger the blade or the bigger the head, they're loud. Smaller diameter heads like that don't seem to make as much noise just because of the surface area. But I can't shoot a head like that, especially hearing that. If I'm standing down by the target and I can hear a coming at me, even if it's only 1 second, it takes a half a second to get there. We've seen deer drop a foot and go way over their back. Even when they, you know, like you see the arrow and then they reverse it, then they put the dot on the screen and then they're like, watch this deer drop. We've all seen it on social media. I can't have that.
Right.
I can't have a loud broadhead. I don't know.
Yeah.
Do you
do anything to silence your bow?
Just tune it really well.
Mm-hmm.
Right. I don't think so. Last year I had a couple, this wasn't last year. This was a couple years ago. When I shot my bow, it was making a lot of noise.
Hmm.
I took my quiver off and that fixed the problem. So I don't know what the deal was, but I think there was my drop away rest, the string on my drop away wet rest was slapping the quiver bar arm, the bar that connects to the little connector there. And it was making a lot of noise. So when I would shoot it, then I would take it off. And then when I would go into the tree, I'd hang it on my backpack or on a hook. And that solved that problem. This year I had a scenario and, I had my sight had a loose screw in it. So I had to make sure I tightened that fixed the problem. But I think if you have a loud bow, more than likely, maybe your cam timing is off. Maybe like something is not tuned. Once I took it in, paper tuned it, once I got my cam timings set where they needed to be, and then I sighted in my bow, it solved all those problems for me anyway. Mm-hmm. So, I would say that if you have a loud bow, it's probably one of those things that it could be tuned out.
Your little one grew 3 inches overnight. Adorable. Also, expensive. Sell their pint-sized pieces on Depop and list them in minutes with no selling fees. Because somewhere, a dad refuses to pay full price for the clothes his kids will outgrow tomorrow. And he's ready to buy your son's entire wardrobe right now. Consider your future growth spurt budget secured. Start selling on Depop, where taste recognizes taste. Payment processing fees and boosting fees still apply. See website for details.
Yeah. That's interesting, man. I haven't thought about that from the tuning standpoint, because I've had the same thing, like loose screws or like depending on like how many points of contact your quiver connects with. Like if mine just has one little, there's like two little nubs and then it, you know, seats into those. And then there's a little like cam that you push over the top of it that kind of seats it. But with, you know, flipping that cam on and off, that screw tends to back out. And then I'll start shooting in the yard and I hear like a like little like crackle when I shoot.
Yeah.
But man, like when I got that bow, had an aluminum riser, went from like a 29 to a 33 axle to axle length. And dude, when I got that thing, I didn't have any limb dampeners in it. And I shot that thing and every shot go boom. I was like, oh, that's not going to work. So
yeah,
luckily it's an easy fix, but
now I haven't shot a carbon bow in a very long time, right? I haven't gone to the ATA show in a couple years. I know some of the carbon technology has got a little better, but one of the first carbon bows that came out, I shot it and it seemed loud. And it also had a ton of hand vibration in it after the shot. It was like a tuning fork. Like you shoot it and you can feel it just vibrate ever so subtly. And so I was like, dude, I don't want to shoot I don't know. I don't know anymore what I want to do because there's this little part of my brain that's like, have you ever watched Lord of the Rings?
You know, I haven't. No.
You haven't. Okay. You're not as big of a nerd as me, but there's like.
Dude, you gave me shit because you hadn't seen Harry Potter when I asked you if you'd seen Harry Potter. And you're
that's
like,
right.
No,
you
I'm not
are
a nerd.
Nerd.
God,
you are
you're
a nerd.
So
no,
full
you're
of
a
it,
nerd.
Dude.
You're a nerd, dude, Harry Potter. Anyway, I was thinking like, I want to try a trad bow in the next coming years.
Yeah.
Right? Why not just make shit as hard as possible?
Mm-hmm.
Right? That way, if I shoot a trad bow, then people can't talk shit on me because I talk shit on people who shoot crossbows. You know, it's all for good fun.
Yeah.
For crossbows. But if I'm shooting a trad bow, dude, you can't make fun of someone who shoots a trad bow, can you?
I mean, I don't think so.
If you were going to point like, I don't think you can talk shit on someone who shoots a trad bow.
No.
Can you?
I don't think so, aside from like, it seems like sometimes right now, it's like all of a sudden everyone's got a trad bow.
Okay.
Like everyone's kind of like jumping on that bandwagon. I think for that very reason of like, well, nobody can talk shit. Like, you know,
yeah.
I'm going to do it the hardest way possible. I don't know, dude.
Remember when like a new band would come out? Like I can remember there's this band Incubus.
Yeah.
And my buddy was all about this band Incubus. Right. And then, it was before they were popular, and then he would get pissed at us when we said we liked the band Incubus because he's like, dude, I was listening to Incubus before you guys. I was telling you all about it. You guys didn't want anything to do with their first album, and I listened to it, and now they're popular. Now you guys like it? Bullshit. So maybe there's a whole bunch of like guys out there who are pissed that more people are picking up trad bows because they were shooting trad before it was cool.
Right. Exactly. And I think that's the stage that we've reached is like, yeah, everybody's found out about it now. Now that said, I do think if you're going to go down the trad rabbit hole and commit yourself to that, I think it's going to make you a better hunter because you're going to have to get closer to deer. Yeah. Like you're just going to have to, you're going to have to like figure out how to get in those more difficult trees or figure out a ground setup or, you know, whatever it may be. I think like you'll benefit as an outdoorsman by making that transition. But yeah, I don't know. If you're doing it just to be cool.
Yeah.
You're not. That's
all of a sudden you go from Sitka, you're wearing Sitka to red and black flannel.
Yep,
it's just,
exactly.
And overnight, you're like, oh, I got to get out of this stage and try something different. And
yep, you're the hipster bow hunter now.
Yep,
that's
smoking
it.
A pipe, you know, the hats where the flaps come down over your ears and you tie it under the chin. Yeah.
Yep. Everyone's just going to look like Fred Bear now. Yeah. Yep. Okay.
And then there's going to be a group of people who are going to be going to like atlatls. Do you know what an atlatl is?
Yeah. Now that I would do. I would hop on, I would leap over the trad bow crowd, and I would try and like beat that one to the punch. Like that sounds freaking cool.
Have you seen the video of like an urban deer walking around with an atlatl, I guess you'd call it an arrow or a spear through its neck?
Mm-hmm. No, I haven't.
Yeah. Yep. Just through it, straight through its neck and just walking
that's
around
insane.
Like, and I mean, it was like a 5 foot long thing. I think that's. And you just whip it. That'd be awesome to be really good at that because you could probably have, just imagine the grains, a total arrow weight of an atlatl arrow or spear or whatever they call them. We're talking like pounds at this point. Like,
yeah.
Like throwing a piece of rebar at a deer. That's pretty sweet. So,
yeah, I don't know how they do it though, man. Like, what would your setup even look like if you're going to hunt deer with an atlatl? Because then you're dealing with like downward trajectory if you're in a tree, but also like the amount of motion that comes with a 5 foot floppy arrow and also like having to load up and like extend to shoot that thing.
I don't know
how you'd even do that.
I think you just get in the gym and you just do tricep pushdowns for days. And you just tricep push down your way right into an atlatl, and you're just going whoop. And so it's not, I mean, here's how much you got to draw with a bow. Yep. If you have the atlatl in the right position, it's just maybe a slight lean back or something. You're in a tree stand, and then it's just a tricep extension explosion right at him.
Right. But are you going to sit like that with your elbow up and like having that thing on your shoulder?
No,
all
I bet
day
you,
long? Or like,
no.
How do you hang? Where do you store it?
You hang it in a tree and then as it, you know, you climb it, you bring it up, you have a little hook for it, just like you would your bow. And then you grab the handle of it. And then it's almost like, cause it, when it's collapsed, right, it's a long tube.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just a long, like two sticks. You grab right. it and then you kind of just rest it just like this, just like you have your fist close to your shoulder and then you just pick it up and you hold it like that. And as that deer gets closer and closer and closer and wham, you got
all
it.
Right.
I mean, the slock
I
master,
suppose, yeah,
Tim,
the downward yeah. trajectory. You wouldn't need to like lift it up that high. So yeah, that's true.
Yeah. The slock master, Tim Wells, that dude's hunting with spears right now.
Right.
No one can talk shit on that dude.
Mm-hmm.
He's hunting with spears. You want to talk about a serious guy, and I know we're off topic here, but that dude about killed himself in Africa with a spear, and now he's out here killing whitetails with spears. To me, that level of badassery is peak male performance. That's all yep. I want to say about that.
Yeah, I agree there. I don't know. It's kind of weird because I feel like you go, you know how, I don't know, you go far enough in one direction, you end up looping back and like reaching the other one. It just makes a big circle. Like there's something I would attribute like the Atlatl hunters right up there with like, I don't know, just in the level of like traditional hunting sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
I would start to put them even closer to like, it's just as badass to like just be toting around like a 30-30 lever action or like
okay,
being like
I gotcha.
An African
old school Western,
yeah, like an old school Western card, yeah, like a 45-70 yep. Marlin or something yeah. like that. That's just like an absolute cannon, but like nothing fancy, just one of the old guns. Like I was
just
love...
riding a horse around a river bottom, a whitetail pops
exactly.
out, and you're shooting a deer from your horse.
Yep, exactly.
Okay. Do you think there will ever be a time where we evolve so much into deer hunting in the future where guys are proud and they're like, yeah, well, if that's the case, you should go shoot a crossbow because a crossbow is now this traditional old school. Do you think a crossbow will ever be old school?
Oh, dude, I don't know. So I grew up, my grandparents were, they were from Europe, mm-hmm. had like all their extended family and stuff was, German and Swiss. My grandpa had this badass old, like it looked like a medieval crossbow. I don't know what century it was from,
yeah,
but it was gnarly. It had a cord on it that was like 3/4 inch thick. Big metal, like hardcore limbs on this thing or whatever, like took just everything you had to pull the thing back. I would much rather hunt deer with that than like anything I own right now. I think that would be freaking epic. Okay. So I think if you go that direction, like you're going to go full on, like talk to like the LARPing club in whatever town you live in and like see if they've got any medieval weaponry.
Okay.
Like, that would be pretty sick.
So the as
modern crossbows,
as,
no.
So we're talking about a traditional crossbow.
Yes.
So
yeah.
if the crossbow was made in the, I don't know, what are medieval times, like 1400s, 1200s,
something
like that?
Something like that,
so, yeah. Let's look this up. We got to look it up. All right, dude. We're off now. So hang on for the ride now, people.
We're trend setting right now. People are going to be toting around medieval crossbows in the deer woods next year.
When were the medieval times? Okay, I'm going to have an answer. The 5th to the 15th century. So if that's correct, then we're talking about year 500 to year 1500? No. Year 5000. Year 5000 to year 1000 to 15,000. What am I talking about?
No, that makes sense.
So that's
when was
roughly,
that the first musket
yeah,
made?
Yeah, year 500 to year 1400. Yeah.
Yeah, that checks out.
Yeah, right around in there. Yeah, so if you're using a crossbow from that time, then yes. All right, so let's ask the next question. When was the first crossbow made? The 6th century BC. Okay, so somewhere around 600 is when the crossbow. If you're using a crossbow that was made, I will give you street cred if you're using a crossbow that was made from year 600 to year 1600.
Deal.
Is that a deal?
Fair. I think that's fair. Yeah.
Okay. But if your crossbow has cams and a trigger, well, all crossbows had triggers. No, some had like little levers, it looks like.
Yeah. There.
Anyway, what I'm getting at is it got to be old school.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Well, we've derailed this podcast hardcore today. So, anyway, I want to get a trad bow. I think that's what I'm going to do for Christmas. I'll buy myself a trad bow.
Yeah.
And then
totally.
I mean, how cool is it to just be like in a river bottom on like a river bank creeping up on any deer and you're just like,
yeah. I think it would make you a better hunter. I think it would open up some cooler experiences, you know, being that close and having like, I don't know, it's like when you have like a turkey come in at like 6 yards or something like that, or it creeps in over your shoulder and you get to see it like that close and you're just like, you can practically hear the thing breathing almost. Like that's just like, there's nothing better than that. It's a lot different than having a whitetail at like 28, 30 yards and like,
right.
Always over there, and then you'll like that's still cool, but
yeah,
the closer you get to them, like the better, right? Because you have to just be so much more aware.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, last question, then we're going to end it. Is shooting an animal with a bow at 100 yards cool?
Dude, that's a tough one. What's the animal?
Any big game species in North America. Antelope. I mean, that's kind of like, they're hard to get close to, right?
Right.
Whitetails. Mm-hmm. Let's just say a whitetail for all intents and purposes. 100-yard shot, 80 to 100-yard shot at a whitetail. What's the deal?
Honestly, my gut says no, because I'm picturing like that arrow flight hitting a whitetail or hitting an antelope or something like that size. And it would be so much cooler watching that arrow do that to like an elk or a caribou or a moose, where you can like you see like that massive target and you see that lighted knock just like smoke it where you're like,
pocket, yeah.
That would, I don't know, for some reason that just sounds cooler just from like a visual standpoint, whereas like the whitetail, you might just like not be able to see it that well. Yeah. I don't know. What do you think?
I don't know. I think that there's really something cool in the word archery. Right now, there's no arch in archery, right? There's definitely no arch in crossbows, right? And so on the cool thing about long shots is exactly what you just said. You get to see the arch in archery. But at 20 yards, it's just now, right? And so that's where the cool thing about trad bow is like, just imagine it. A guy so good, he could take a 35, 40-yard shot and smoke a target and watch that arrow just drop right into the pocket. And that's what's cool about long shots. But with the technology in a compound bow, I feel like long shots are now have went from cool to what are you trying to prove? Mm-hmm. Right? Like, I don't get it. Like you can't get close enough to an animal to shoot it at 20. I don't know.
Well, that's it. Right. Yeah. Like now that's kind of what that means. Like, oh yeah, I shot this whitetail at like 35, 40 yards. I'm like, great. You couldn't get any closer. Like that's what that equates to now. Like everybody's mind jumps to that. Yeah.
You said that. And 35 yards is my longest, right? Mm-hmm. There's something awesome. Like as far as bow hunting, the way I do it, man, if you are in a tree stand and you put yourself in a position to get 20 yards, I shot my whitetail this year at 19 yards. Okay. 19 yards. That's pretty damn close to get a whitetail to not spook. And okay. But at 40, 50 yards, now you're starting to get into this. They're, you know, they don't even know you're there.
Yeah. You're outside of their bubble. Exactly.
The kind of, depending on if they come in downwind, whatever. I don't know. And maybe there's also a little part of me that is like, Dan, shut up. Nobody cares what you think. Nobody cares what you have to say. Like, who gives a shit if you shoot it with a crossbow? And I can get on board with that too. Like, oh, dude, you shot a deer at 100 yards. Who gives a shit? Right? Congratulations. You shot a deer. Awesome.
Right. Because that same 100 yard shot, I don't know if we're talking about the arc and the crossbow at 100 yards. Like, at that point, you're able to see that arrow arc into the target.
Yeah, maybe.
But like, is it as cool as, I don't know, like shooting freehand, making a 100 yard crack with iron sights? Like, that's, you know what I mean? Like, there's,
yeah.
I don't know.
Here's what I will 100% have faith in what I'm about to say. The older I get, the more of an asshole that I become, and I can't help it. Right. So I say dumb comments like almost this entire podcast. And it's like my grandpa, before he died, he said some ridiculous shit in front of large groups of people. And my mom would be like, huh? Like, what? And get real embarrassed at him. And so I don't know if it's in the bloodline or what the deal is, but like, I'm heading that direction, dude. Like, I don't get it. Well,
dude, I was hunting public last night. I end up running into this guy, and there's another gentleman, like this older guy who.
If you're a podcast host, listen up. This one's for you. My name is Allie Jackson. I'm the host of Finding Mr. Height, a dating and relationship podcast that I've been doing for 4 years now, sharing my positive and practical approach to dating that's built on my own life experience. And I wanted to share another experience that I've had, my secret behind monetizing my show. It's called Red Circle. And I was just telling my colleague about how much I love their platform. With Red Circle, not only am I getting a seamless hosting experience, but I also love the support I receive in ad sales. It's not just typical ad sales either. It's targeted opportunities based on my show and my life. And the platform is super simple. You just set your preferences and Red Circle matches you with sponsors that align with your show. You can vet every opportunity and their platform gives you great analytics. More recently too, my Red Circle team has brought me opportunities outside of my podcast on social media to really augment the podcast partnerships, bring them full circle. I just can't recommend them enough. If you want to give it a try, go to redcircle.com to get your free trial. That's redcircle.com for a free trial. If you're a podcast host, listen up. This one's for you. My name is Allie Jackson. I'm the host of Finding Mr. Height, a dating and relationship podcast that I've been doing for 4 years now, sharing my positive and practical approach to dating that's built on my own life experience. And I wanted to share another experience that I've had, my secret behind monetizing my show. It's called Red Circle. And I was just telling my colleague about how much I love their platform. With Red Circle, not only am I getting a seamless hosting experience, but I also love the support I receive in ad sales. It's not just typical ad sales either. It's targeted opportunities based on my show and my life. And the platform is super simple. You just set your preferences and Red Circle matches you with sponsors that align with your show. You can vet every opportunity and their platform gives you great analytics. More recently too, my Red Circle team has brought me opportunities outside of my podcast on social media to really augment the podcast partnerships, bring them full circle. I just can't recommend them enough. If you want to give it a try, go to redcircle.com to get your free trial. That's redcircle.com for a free trial.
Owns this property that butts up to this public. And so I'm talking to this guy and he's like, oh yeah, like my fiance's family owns this property or whatever. So we started getting close to the property line. I was like, well, you know, it's good chatting with you. I'll loop around. Like, don't worry about it. Like, you know, hopefully we'll see you out here again. And he's like, oh, well, dude, like I'll give you a ride back to your car. Like, don't worry. You don't have to walk all the way back that way. Like, by all means, like, heck, we might even ask this guy. It sounds like he's over there. Like, I'll even ask him for you. Like, if you can just park here. So it's, you know, a shorter walk for you. You can get in a little bit sneakier. And, this guy's got a skid steer and he's like unloading a bunch of stuff. We helped him get stuff, like a bunch of these deck boards unloaded. He gets out of the skid steer. We're chatting and stuff. It's dark. He hadn't like come out of he was like still in the shed. We were standing outside and we talked to this guy for like 15 minutes and he didn't even realize that it wasn't until like right when we were about to, you know, part ways that he realized that this entire time he'd been talking to his future son-in-law. Like, I think there's something, you reach that age where you just don't care. It's like, whoever I'm talking to, great. Whatever I'm saying sounds good. But
yes, sir. Absolutely. That's a great way to end it. Pierce, really appreciate you taking time out of your day. If you're listening to this, do me a favor and hop on over to the Wisconsin Sportsman podcast. Pierce hosts that, still hosts it. He lives in Iowa, but he's we'll call him a dual resident. He bounces back and forth between Iowa and Wisconsin quite a bit. So go check out that podcast. A lot of awesome information. Pierce, appreciate your time. Thanks for all you do. And we'll talk to you when we talk to you, man.
Sounds good, man. Appreciate it.
How many discounts does USAA auto insurance offer? Too many to say here. Multi-vehicle discount, safe driver discount, new vehicle discount, storage discount, legacy.
How many discounts will you stack up? Tap the banner or visit usaa.com/autodiscounts. Restrictions apply.
You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.